Yle Podcast.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of All Points North. In today's show, we break down Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin's summit in Helsinki, getting the lowdown on the politics and asking, what does it all mean for Finland?
This is the All Points North podcast, telling you everything you need to know about Finland this week.
Hello, this is All Points North, the podcast that can help you sort your defence spending commitments from your partnerships for peace. I'm Egan Richardson, and joining me in the studio today is Eddie Hawkins, a man with extensive experience of East-West meetings. Welcome, Eddie.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Also in the studio today is Zina Ivino, who has been out and about around the summit venues. Welcome, Zina.
Thank you.
And finally today, our special guest is Charlie Salonius-Pasternak from the Finnish Institute of International Affairs. Charlie is an expert on US politics and transatlantic relations and has therefore spent much of July talking to media about the presidents of Russia and the US. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Now, it's been an extraordinary couple of days in Helsinki, and I know many people, including Charlie, were a little concerned about concrete policy shifts coming out of the summit. But the aftermath has actually been dominated by Trump's behaviour in the press conference and his continued obsession or focus on allegations of election interference by Russia. Now, let's remember that 12 Russian intelligence operatives were indicted last Friday on charges of influencing the US presidential election in 2016, and Trump was asked by Democrats to cancel the summit off the back of those indictments. Now, the US press corps asked pointed questions about the issue on Monday, and Trump did not quite manage to condemn Russian actions. Let's hear what he had to say.
Both made some mistakes. I think that the probe is a disaster for our country. I think it's kept us apart. It's kept us separated. There was no collusion at all. Everybody knows it. People are being brought out to the fore. So far that I know, virtually none of it related to the campaign. President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer. Okay, thank you. Our relationship has never been worse than it is now. However, that changed as of about 4 hours ago. I really believe that.
In the entire history of our country, Americans have never seen a president of the United States support an adversary the way President Trump has supported President Putin. For the President of the United States to side with President Putin against American law enforcement, American defense officials, American intelligence agencies, is thoughtless, it's dangerous, it's weak. The President is putting himself over our country.
And that was President Donald Trump speaking after the summit and US Senator Chuck Schumer giving his reaction to Trump's comments. That was quite a summit. Now, Charlie, the reaction in the US has been quite negative. Has a US president ever interacted with his Russian counterpart quite like this?
I can't at least remember one. I'm hoping some historian or someone else will correct me, but it seems deeply unique. But it kind of fits the uniqueness also of the strategic situation. We may get to it, but first time ever, the U.S. and Russian leaders have the same strategic goal of undermining, dividing, and breaking up Europe and the EU. So it fits this genuinely unique political situation we also find ourselves in.
Yeah, but before the summit, you were concerned about Trump possibly making specific concessions off the cuff when he's speaking one-on-one with Putin in discrete policy areas. But he didn't seem focused enough to actually do that. He didn't seem to understand what he might be giving away or what he might be doing. But he's rather consumed by the probe. Is that a relief, even?
Well, obviously, we have no idea what happened over 2 hours. I've understood the U.S. side has already debriefed the U.S. translator, so maybe there's some clarity, at least on that side. We will likely never know what they actually discussed. But yes, so I was concerned about something giving away, not formally, but exactly as you suggested, because Trump doesn't know enough in a way that he would give something strategic up in exchange for some petty tactical thing that Putin can whenever kind of retract. Again, we don't know if this happened, but certainly there were a few mines that Putin laid and Trump stepped into. We'll probably get into them later.
Yeah. The one thing that was interesting yesterday was the reaction from European allies. I noticed that the German foreign minister said after the press conference that we can no longer fully rely on the White House. Radek Sikorski, the former Polish foreign minister, tweeted that now, as a US ally, we're supposed to believe that if President Putin launches a hybrid war or even a nuclear strike against Poland, President Trump will threaten to nuke him back. The Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko tweeted that we are ready to defend our land even if we remain all alone. Is this just talk, or has it really shaken some of the bedrocks of the Western security system?
I don't think just the Helsinki meeting, but if you look at the whole week and put the whole week, so that's the NATO summit, Trump's UK visit, and then Helsinki summit, in a broader context, this just kind of underlined that Trump genuinely does not see the value in transatlantic alliance. He probably doesn't understand that U.S. global power is reliant on this relationship. And I think that is the fundamental kind of recognition that you're now getting senior officials, retired and acting, to genuinely admit that we're now dealing with a person that doesn't get what every other American leader has gotten for the last 70 years.
You mentioned landmines there. What kind of landmines did Trump step on?
Well, the easiest, or maybe a judo metaphor would be better considering, was Putin when asked about the election interference, when he offered that, of course, Mueller's team can effectively come to Russia and we'll help them because we're all about rule of law and there's this agreement, and presenting the idea that Russia is the bedrock of rule of law and standing by international agreements and all this. Oh, but by the way, of course, we expect some sort of reciprocity here. And then he mentions kind of one person who's become an associated code word, so Browder, which has to do fundamentally with sanctions on financial-related problems to those closest to Putin.
This is Bill Browder, who pushed through the Magnitsky Act.
Yes, and he was mentioned explicitly. So this was a clear kind of linkage that, okay, we'll help you, but you're going to help us nail this. And by the way, we don't this. So it's, of course, an offer that there is no way the U.S. can accept. Trump thought it was a great offer. Zero chance Mueller is going to take him up on it. But it allows Russia to now say, hey, look, we were following agreements. We were following rule of law. We offered this, and it's the Americans who don't want this. And so, a sign of good preparation on the Russian side, and a, shall we say, in Finnish, one would say takkiauki, maybe slightly overconfident and easygoing non-prep on the U.S. side.
Right. Now, Finland was the host country today, but we've been wondering what impression did Finland make and what were the implications of the summit for Finland. So first, let's hear from Donald again about what he thought about Finland.
We very much appreciate Finland. Very highly respect your country. Our relationship has been a very good one, and our personal relationship has been very good, and I enjoyed being with you a couple of days ago. NATO is, I think, never been stronger, and it was a little bit tough at the beginning, and it turned out to be love.
So that's an interesting comment in many ways, not least because it wasn't clear that Trump didn't understand that Finland isn't a NATO member. But Charlie, what do you think the implications are for Finland? There was a bit of excitement and pride beforehand in the fact that we were chosen to host this event, but was that maybe hubris? Is Finland going to want to be associated with this in future years?
I think so, because any of the fallout, as we've just discussed, right now is focused on U.S. domestic politics mainly. Expectations weren't great, and nothing concrete was delivered. So I don't see anything where Finland could be kind of pointed out. And obviously, there wasn't a deal. So at least for now, Finland's not going to be known as a Yalta, you know, of the 21st century. Now, we have no idea, again, if there were some side agreements over this two-hour period that we don't know about. But at least for now...
The secret protocols.
The secret protocols, which Finland has some experience of also, fortunately. So I don't see that as a problem. Rather, what I saw, if I were to put my tourism hat on, I saw endless kind of tourist material, you know, kind of you couldn't buy this kind of PR and advertising, whether or not it's, you know, Fox's or, you know, CNN's backgrounds of presidential palace sunsets, all of this. So I think good, and a little bit of humor also from some foreign reporters in terms of how Finnish police treat people and all this. So I think overall a good Finland picture probably was sent out to the people who actually cared and followed in the world.
Now, I want to bring in Eddie here a little because, Eddie, you were in Helsinki back in 1975.
Yeah, which makes me the senior in this room.
Yeah, you're the senior correspondent from the diplomatic summits. That was the historic CSCE summit when the Soviet Union and the Western countries agreed certain human rights and border.
Well, this was issues. The Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe in 1975. It brought together the heads of government of state of 33 European countries, the United States and Canada, and of course the great powers. The two, because it was a bipolar world at the time, so it was the United States and the Soviet Union. It was a massive event. And in retrospect, even though it was celebrated at the time, I don't think anyone fully understood how significant that gathering was. But it was also quite different from what we saw yesterday because this was the culmination of a long process. There was a document to be signed, the Helsinki Accords, and these heads of government, heads of state, these leaders, they knew what they were putting their names to. They sat down and they did it. Sort of very briefly, it covered three main areas. It was security and confidence building measures. Those continue today under the auspices of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Then there were like trade agreements, and then there was the human rights basket. And actually, I think it's fair, I think Charlie probably agree with me, it's fair to say that that summit in Helsinki was the thin wedge that eventually led to the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Yep.
And a complete change of the world order. So it was big in more than just the size of the number of participants.
And as you were saying, you know, a complete contrast to this in terms of its preparation, both in depth, length, width, kind of a completely opposite, I think, of what we saw yesterday.
So Trump failed to do his homework. But some of the international media actually failed to do their homework a little bit as well. There was a lot of talk of neutrality, which possibly harks back to the Cold War and that period. But there has been a strong effort from the Finnish political leadership to stress that Finland is not neutral anymore. It's anchored in the Western security architecture. Do you think that's succeeded? Has that message got through?
Well, I mean, I can. If I reflect on things that I've been asked, certainly came up. In fact, my last interview last night at around 10 was about this. But it quite quickly became apparent that it was really about would Finland join NATO and when. And of course, I've to everyone who's asked about it or brought it up, I've said, look, we EU member since 95, Euro, deep security defense cooperation with NATO, US, Sweden, all this, that, you know, politically aligned, economically aligned, and militarily aligned. That's a whole long load of things to expect an international journalist who maybe hasn't thought about Finland for a while. You know, so it's easier just to write neutral because it doesn't belong to NATO. I'm hoping that if we did the same thing 20 years from now, then kind of the Finland image will have been updated And it will no longer be neutral, but it'll be about EU member Finland, if there's an EU still then. But I think it went in a better direction over the last week when I think about the first articles and then what I was asked yesterday, for instance.
So there's a progression there. Yep. So the effort has been successful to a degree. But Zina, you've been around the press centres over the last few days. What do you think of the strawberry and sauna diplomacy? Did you think it worked its charm on the international press corps?
It definitely worked its charm. And if it wasn't hot enough outdoors for these foreign reporters, they could enjoy a sauna outside. But most were definitely enjoying the air conditioning inside Finlandia Hall, which featured everything from Marimekko interiors to Nordic Scandinavian food. There was a lot of waiting going on. So this was a chance for the foreign ministry to really project the desirable image of Finland. So there was a reel going the entire time, featuring everything from the Finnish baby box to coding in Finnish schools to, you know, the Finnish welfare state in general. So it was a definite PR campaign.
And we even have some of the leftover strawberries here
indeed
in the studio with us right now.
And as I understand, it was a lot of small Finnish or some bigger companies also that kind of, just say, a little bit of a team effort that maybe the foreign ministry coordinated, but certainly private companies, you know, strawberries, all of these came together. So it almost for a moment felt walking there that it was like a mini Finnish village, but I recognize I have my blue and white glasses on right now, so...
It sounds wonderful. It sounds wonderful. Now it's time for a look at the press. And Eddie, you've been following the newspapers over the past few days and this morning. What have the Finnish and international press been saying?
Well, just a bit about what the Finnish press has been giving its readers in terms of commentary and analysis. And you mentioned earlier that the aftermath has been dominated by Trump and his performance at the press conference, and that's something that a lot of analysts took a look at as well. For example, Aamulehti, which is the main daily in Tampere, and there was an analysis by one of its staff writers, Mina Kurki, who said that it looked as if Putin had enjoyed his World Cup as a main course and then come to Helsinki and had Donald Trump for dessert. She said,
nice line.
Yeah. And she also said that apparently it was tasty. So she, Kurki, also pointed out that not a lot was expected from this meeting, and so it lived up in that respect. If there was a winner at all, she definitely believes that that Putin was the winner.
There's a consensus on that, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Although she took some comfort in the fact that that there was mention of world peace and that steps in that direction. So perhaps something will come out of this. Now, Helsingin Sanoma, which is the nation's largest newspaper, they brought in an outsider, Mika Aaltola, who is with the Finnish Institute for International Affairs, global security expert there. He brought up the fact that there possibly is a chance that this could bring some steps on issues like Syria and anti-terrorist actions and even the nuclear disarmament or nuclear controls. Now, the country's largest Swedish-speaking daily, Huvudstadsbladet, said that at the press conference, neither one of them actually looked very comfortable. And Putin slipped into his sort of patented Sphinx-like countenance.
There's a certain glint in his eye sometimes.
Well, yeah, but there was a couple of shots from some of the opening meetings that looked that way. But at the press conference, he also he seemed to dominate that in her view as well. About the only concrete thing that was agreed upon was setting up this body to look at developing relations, and it was symbolic, and that was what the whole meeting was judged to be by this writer. Just simply symbolic. A number of the papers did question what Finland got out of it, and they brought up these same points. A lot of good PR. But most importantly, the opportunity to clear Finland's image as being in this gray zone, that where does Finland actually belong? And the paper said that the media should have got this message. Certainly President Niinistö was very vocal about this and repeated it several times and very clearly the exact same thing that that Charlie gave us here. I just want to add one more press commentary from this morning, and that's from one of the tabloids, from Ilta Sanomat. And Ilta Sanomat decided, well, after all, you know, that a lot of the discussion about this was who won, who lost, who was the better man, perhaps the bigger man. So they decided that one measure of the winner and loser from the Helsinki summit or meeting between the two of them was who had the longest motorcade.
They counted the cars.
They counted the number of cars, and they published a graphic illustration of the motorcade of President Donald Trump and of Vladimir Putin.
So who won?
It was Trump. Trump had not only two Finnish motorcycle police outriders, but he had 33 other vehicles, limos, cars, and security. So he was far and away. He was well out in front of
him. He's always going to win that, isn't he? I noticed with the video of the Russian motorcade, all the cars went through, and they got progressively less expensive, less luxurious as they went to the end. And then the final vehicle that went along at the end of the motorcade was a bus. I just thought you could just have a bus for everybody. A couple of buses, that'd be fine.
Yeah,
a lot less disruption that way.
I actually heard a Russian journalist who expressed some chagrin at the fact that Putin used his new limousine, which is a Russian-produced limousine, but it has a German engine.
Oh, it's terrible.
This was not something that should please everyone.
No, I bet they were disgruntled. Well, thanks, Eddie. Now it's time to hear a little bit more about the protests around the summit. So, Zina, you actually met some celebrity protesters.
Yes, I did. Award-winning Finnish Estonian author Sofi Oksanen spoke at the main demonstration, which was called Helsinki Calling. Now, she's talked a lot about Finlandization and how Trump and Putin want to undermine Europe. She's even called Finland a psychological lab for the reach of Soviet power. She said Finland was a place during the Cold War where Moscow could practice behavioral control by limiting information. So Oksanen has claimed that Russia used this method to help Donald Trump win the presidency through this alleged election meddling. That's interference that centered on strategic social media campaigns to sway American voters. Let's hear what she had to say.
Well, it seems like that both Trump and Putin, they want to make Europe as weak as possible. We could also say that they are using the tools of Finlandization for Europe in a way as well, to make it look not trustworthy, for example. That's one of the tools also in the toolkit of Finlandization, because, you know, other Western countries at the time didn't really trust Finland because they were thinking that we were on the Soviet side. So that's one of the strategies, we can say. But also I'm worried about the money issues, because when we think about the time of Finlandization, Then one of the incentives for Finland was actually the bilateral trade with the Soviet Union. And now they are, both Trump and Putin, they are offering bilateral different kind of deals. And this kind of way to is one of the way to make cracks in the European Union as well.
Sofi Oksanen there, outspoken as ever. Charlie, do you think this is true? Do you think we could see a resurfacing of Cold War era spheres of influence?
Well, certainly. And here I have to say I'm not a Russia expert. We have a hall full of them at the Finnish Institute of International Affairs. But what I've understood is that it is part of the Soviet and now Russian kind of self-image of if you are a great power, you have spheres of influence. And also in reverse, if you don't have acknowledged spheres of influence, you cannot be counted as a great power. So certainly, from Kremlin's perspective, you need them. Then whether or not Finland, for instance, necessarily belongs to this is a different question. I think there are different levels. There are some former Soviet republics where one Kremlin wants a kind of an iron grip. And then there are others, maybe like, kind of in between where you want to have an ability to meddle. And then maybe there are ones where you want to just guarantee some economic interests, Finland and Nord Stream, for instance, ensure that it remains an environmental issue only and so on. One thing I have to say, though, that if I can even comment on Sophie's meant about the West didn't trust the Finns. Well, some certainly didn't. But now that we have a historical record, it's quite clear that there were a number of people in Europe, but also in the U.S., who recognized that mostly it was a game and that there were certainly some Finns not to be trusted, but that there were others that certainly were doing a kind of a kabuki theater, as it were, and certainly were or viewed themselves as part of the West.
Yeah, it's a confusing historical period, I guess.
It certainly is.
One thing Oksana mentioned was the possibility of trade deals being used to split the EU and the West. Is that really possible? I mean, obviously with Brexit, it might become possible in different places. But I mean, is it a realistic proposition with what they announced yesterday?
I don't think kind of de jure trade deals. There would be enough pressure from Brussels to not do this. But a little bit like we can see some instances even in Finland, I think certainly you can do these kind of de facto deals, kind of geopolitics writ large, where you have some sticks, but you mainly are trying to create kind of splits within society using carrots. We'll give you some more benefits and you will close out of these deals. That certainly has shown itself to be effective in different parts of Europe. And so I don't know why wouldn't continue. And this can have the effect of de facto kind of the creating these, I won't call them trade deals, but preferred arrangements.
Okay. Interesting times. Now let's hear some more sounds off the streets.
Well, the three of us, being U.S. citizens, are, you know, we are obviously gravely concerned about our current president and his policies. And so when we found out that he was following us on our summer vacation, you know, we figured that we have to participate and show our displeasure. And I'm hoping that this is going to get a lot of coverage because I know that Mr. Trump, being such a infantile human being, it's going to piss him off like there's no tomorrow. So we're obviously not going to reach the numbers that they had in London, but we're doing our best even without the Trump diaper baby.
There's a couple of thousand of us here only. London had 250,000, so I'm a bit disappointed actually. There should be a clear message for these ministers that this can't go on. I mean, we have to respect human rights. We have to gain peace and democracy. We have to stop the climate change immediately. It's kind of the first question they should solve.
Oh, we are not anti-everything. We are for human rights, democracy, peace, climate action, those things that the presidents Trump and Putin are avoiding in their talks and in their actions.
So, wow, that sounded like quite a festive feel, Zina.
Definitely, there was a summer festival feel at all of the rallies. Helsinki Calling organizers said the turnout was as high as 4,000 people. But by the time the speakers took the stage in the Senate Square, which was the centerpiece for the action on Sunday, I probably counted 500 people there, and many of them were just tourists and passersby. So I think there's a couple reasons for this muted enthusiasm. The protest day was switched at the last minute, and some people blame protester fatigue. You know, Helsinki Pride took place 2 weeks ago, and that drew out 100,000 people. Another potential damper could have been that there was no clear focus for the main Helsinki Calling demonstration. The event brought together dozens of NGOs under a banner highlighting threats against democracy and human rights. But overall, one element that really stood out to me was in its absence was the complete lack of placard-waving Putin protesters. I saw a sea of creative and eye-catching anti-Trump signs, but hardly any slamming Putin, who's our next-door neighbor. So that's something I'm trying to understand. Maybe it's still all about Finlandization, like Sofi Oksanen said.
Could be.
Finns don't want to rock the boat too close to home, or does Trump just evoke so much more emotion and ridicule? But not everyone was out on the streets of Helsinki to demonstrate against the meeting between Trump and Putin. Next, we'll hear from Liina Iisto. She's a deputy chair of the Finns Party's youth wing and an organizer of the Welcome Trump rally in Kamppi.
We are celebrating the fact that Mr. Trump is coming to Finland, and also we want to say that his policies are something that pleases us.
Which policies are you referring to?
Particularly his immigration policies, but also the way he's made finances boom and also increased the employment rate.
If you could borrow something from his immigration policy and enact it in Finland, what would it be?
It would be border control. Like, it doesn't mean we have to be closed up, but it means that we have to have some type of border control to know, like, who's actually coming in here, because it's all about safety.
So the Finns Party's pro-Trump rally was pretty jovial. It was complete with a Statue of Liberty and Uncle Sam there in person to romanticize some idealized version of America. But there was also a much darker tone there. The far-right Soldiers of Odin were also at the Trump rally. Now, the Soldiers of Odin are a white supremacist group that have been convicted in Finland for physically assaulting people. Odin's soldiers are a gang of vigilantes that have been known to go on nighttime migrant patrols to harass people. But the officials at the Finns Party gathering, they just brushed off Odin's presence there, saying that they have a right to attend public events like anybody else. Now, as we just heard, the Finns Party is a fan of the Trump administration's tough attitude towards immigration. Charlie, do you think xenophobic groups like the Soldiers of Odin in Finland are being further legitimized by Trump's immigration rhetoric?
They absolutely are. I mean, it's obvious just looking at the U.S., but also how it's kind of leached into here, talking about they're not humans. And I mean, same things I'm hearing, Rwanda, cockroaches, all this. So it catches on. And in this era, it catches on much faster through social media. So absolutely. I'm amused that it always so happens that the Finns Party representatives are either Soldiers of Odin or then raising their right hand or neo-Nazis, fascists. It just always happens that there are people affiliated with both in the same groups. But maybe there's just a lot of coincidences. If I can also talk about this border control aspect, you know, we need good border control. I mean, we have one of the best border control agencies on the planet. We absolutely know who's coming in and out, for example, border between Finland and Russia. So this seems like adopting Trump's kind of verbal, can I say garbage, kind of importing it directly into Finland without actually thinking about what Finland is like.
Can I just add something? Also, this point that Charlie's making about the transfer and also about the lack of the Putin sort of, you know, anti-Putin placards and all of this kind of thing. So much, particularly I think, you know, under a certain age, so much of what is being absorbed and is being considered as important as it causes today, we blame the interwebs. You know, this is, it's an online generation, and who dominates the internet? It's U.S., it's American culture and society. And so, you know, clever anti-Trump placards, you know, in the march, because people have a model for that kind of thing. You know, sort of also the saluting, you know, the Nazi salutes, jackbooted people that show up on the edges of some of these rallies. Where did that come from? I mean, that as well, you know, it comes out of, you know, the net and you know, certain forums. And
one thing that I think, at least for a few people, it would have been lovely to hear asked about them, is there's still somewhere an expectation difference. You know, it's sad as it is, there's almost an expectation that, yes, Putin's going to have journalists murdered and they're going to take, you know, kids and everyone else, protesters, into jail. But the U.S. president isn't expected to stand for this. Now, a long, deep discussion about, you know, problems, as it were. But there's a slight expectation difference of how U.S. and Russian presidents should behave, or at least minimally care about human rights and so on. And now that there seems to be much more equivalence, I can see a greater kind of, I don't know, sadness almost. And then it comes out in protesting.
That's a good point. And it does chime into our question from the audience, which this week comes from Licia Pren from Facebook. She says, more than anything, I guess I just want to know what the post-Trump West will look like. So she's hinting at this shift, this massive shift in the expectations around what an American president, what a Western leader should do, what they should look like. Charlie, do you think the West as we know it will survive Trump?
I don't like that pause.
I mean, because I wanted to say the West, the way it was conceived in the Cold War, but even in the last kind of the Cold War, post-Cold War quarter century, will not survive. So in that way, it's like a moving train. That'll keep on moving. I wrote a piece right after, partially a little bit before the election, saying that, look, the transatlantic bond is strong enough because the military institutional cooperation, and then the economic one is so broad and primarily made up of private sector companies, that one president can't immediately screw it up. And I don't think he can screw it up in 4 years. If we get 8 years of Trump, the impacts on the kind of the fundaments of the West, of which a transatlantic relationship is a key factor, and then there's, you know, Japan, Australia, all these, it will be reformed in a way that is not going to be good for us. We already see signs of this. I mean, yesterday, Russia and U.S. met. At the same time, EU and China met to kind of hammer out and talk about global trade, do it multilaterally, rules-based. This pairing of China-Europe talking about, you know, kind of global rules-based trade, and clearly Russia and U.S. maybe not as much, is probably not one that I imagine, let's say, Ronald Reagan or Gerald Ford or many others would have expected.
It's a troubling development. Final, last question before we wrap it up, because we're running out of time here. It comes from Ansgar Frankenberg, who says he wants to know who's paying for this meeting and all the security measures. Is it the USA and Russia, or is it the Finnish taxpayer? And also, why do they need to meet in downtown Helsinki? Somewhere in the woods in Kainuu would be way easier and cheaper. Now, what do you think of backwards Kainuu diplomacy? Is there a future in that? Should they go to the sauna and just leave them there till they hammer something out? Is there any precedent for this, Eddie, back in the day?
Well, I mean, back in the day, I mean, if we want to, you know, go back again to, you know, 1975, I mean, it was sort of the classic style of then and long-term President Urho Kekkonen to take his opponents into the sauna, and that's where deals were hammered out.
Not release them till they agreed.
Yeah, basically, drown them in the pool if they wouldn't come around. No, seriously. As a serious answer to this question, it's also a matter of infrastructure. Regardless of where this happens, what are we going to do with 1,500 to 1,700 journalists in Kainuu? Or sorry, was it?
It was Kainuu.
Kainuu.
He suggested Kainuu.
In Kainuu. Does the Finnish army have that many pup tents? I don't know. Well, I mean, where do you land Air Force One? What do you do with, you know, security arrangements and all that sort of thing? I don't know whose penny this was.
I think Sipilä said this morning that it was the Finnish taxpayer, the Valtio Neuvosto.
Well, and here I could say, of course, I mean, President Niinistö met with Trump and Putin, and being that it was quite clear that Trump really wanted this meeting, Niinistö could have maybe done what, by accounts, Trump did to Merkel and said, by the way, here's the bill for this meeting. but maybe it was inconvenient. It was a pain to walk through, you know, central Helsinki in a suit in yesterday's weather.
Sorry, I just want to inject here before it gets lost. I understand that the one previous visit that Donald Trump made to Finland, which was...
It was in 1992.
Here, a business deal that he
went to Rauma.
Went to Rauma. He flew in. He had some negotiations. I've read somewhere that he used a private jet for this, and he sent his jet fuel bill to his host afterwards. So let's hope we don't get that.
Let's hope that. But I mean, again, having watched a fair bit of the footage, Finland could not buy the PR. I mean, competitor kind of, let's take CNN. They brought all of their global news all-stars. They sat all day with a beautiful sunny backdrop of Presidentinlinna on through, you know, Helsinki. You can't buy this, no matter how much money you would offer. So, yes, it cost us. It was a little bit of a pain for us who lived here. All the clever people who didn't have to work hopefully went to their cottage. Overall, I think a pretty good deal for us.
CNN did some brilliant stuff as well with their split screen. There were a couple of times when you could tell from the backdrop that the people were sitting next to each other, but they had them on a split screen anyway with a different backdrop. So you got the maximum Helsinki skyline on the screen.
They had one going towards Palace and one towards the president. I mean, you know, these are pros, you know. CNN, they didn't bring quite 100 people, but they brought a lot of people here, as did Fox and so on. Global resources, let's put it that way.
Yeah, so not a total loss.
If you have something on your mind, just send your audio message to our All Points North WhatsApp account. Our WhatsApp number is +358 44 421 0909. Tell us what's on your mind, and your comment or question might be heard on our next show.
But unfortunately, that's all we have time for today, as we all need to get back to, or most of us, many of us, need to get back to our July holidays. Actually, you three.
Yes, that's right.
I'm at work for another couple of weeks. But thank you anyway, Charlie, Zena, Eddie, thanks for joining us, and enjoy the rest of your summers. Thanks to our sound technician today, Marco Vierico, and our producer, Lydia Taylorson. Our next podcast will be in mid-August, but you can check out previous editions at wiley.fi/allpointsnorth, and of course keep up to date with the news at wiley.fi/news.
You've been listening to All Points North, a podcast produced by Yle News, a unit of the Finnish Broadcasting Company. For daily news from Finland in English, head to yle.fi/news and follow us online at Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. You've been listening to Yle News.